and welcome to the Mercenary Star Podcast. We are a Battletech podcast highlighting the storied mercenary units in the Battletech universe. My name is Seth, aka White Fox SG, and I'm your host. Today we are on episode 26, covering the Fox Patrol. I am joined by special guest and my co-host for today, Battletech author and Fox Patrol author, Brian Young. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing swell. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on and joining me to talk all things Fox Patrol. We also have a special, we'll have a special discussion at the end where we kind of preview Outfoxed, which has been out for a week, 5 days,
yeah, something like that.
A week today. Absolutely. So that is the newest Battletech novel that is out in all the places. And we'll have links to that in the show notes as well. But first, a couple of questions about yourself, Brian. How did you get into Battletech?
My first exposure to Battletech was actually the original Super Nintendo MechWarrior game back in the early 90s. We had that playing on the Super Nintendo, my siblings and I. And I used to play as a mercenary and just take contracts and blow people out of the water.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was my first introduction to it. And then I had a friend who had his family had like a family business in their basement, and they had like 8 networked machines down there. In the later 90s. So we played a whole bunch of MechWarrior 2 down there. So it was like, it was always sort of a grab bag, whether we played like Warcraft or MechWarrior 2 or Doom 2 or whatever. But we played a lot of MechWarrior 2 down there too. And I had like rule books for the tabletop game, but I never really played because I didn't have any of the pieces or anything. I had a couple of maps and stuff, but none of the stuff for it. And I never got into tabletop until I was an author, actually.
But
I love tabletop now. Like, I play so much tabletop now. I really dig it. But the video games were really my introduction to Battletech.
They are a huge introduction for a lot of people into the Battletech MechWarrior universe. And it's funny how many people recognize it and then say, oh, I know this, you know, from the video games. So I did not have the Super Nintendo or a Super Nintendo. I was old enough to have an original Nintendo, but we never had one in my house. The only console that I had was the Game Boy, and that was kind of like middle school when I got that. I remember because it was right when Pokemon, like the video game, like the original thing, started at all. But I did, like your friend, have 3 computers in my house in like 1990. Because my mom ran a business out of our house. And so me and my friends would sit around and play MechWarrior 1, even though it wasn't, you know, LAN compatible. We would play that just back to back with each other. Then MechWarrior 2 and Warcraft and Star Wars, Dark Forces and stuff like that. TIE Fighter, all those great games. I did have a friend that introduced me to the tabletop first. And then like the fiction and the video games probably right at the same time, because they were as excited about it as could be at the time. Awesome. Well, okay, so here's another important question. Why foxes? Because as it may be obvious, I'm kind of a fan of foxes in general.
So for me, actually, this went back to like around that same time when I was in Boy Scouts. One of my squads, like when I was in the Boy Scouts, was the Fox Patrol. So it was just like, it felt like a little homage to my youth.
Nice.
I was in a few different, you know, groups in the Boy Scouts, and the Fox Patrol was one that I was in. I just thought it was a fun name. And it was kind of cute, and I had the idea for what the mech like color scheme would be in a way that I hadn't really seen.
Sure.
And it's, you know, it's not dog based necessarily, right? Which we see a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot absolutely. Of in BattleTech. And so that's what I went with. And I really liked, that there was a mech that like, there was a model of mech that had that name that it felt like it could fit in the universe, and I could have that little nod to just something in my youth that I would be the only one who would get or care about.
Yeah.
And that's really where it came from. And I thought it was going to be sort of a throwaway kind of thing. I had no idea the Fox Patrol would be have any modicum of popularity whatsoever, and that I would still be... I mean, I wrote... The first Fox Patrol story came out in like 2020, but I wrote it in like 2019, like early 2019. Like, I didn't think 6 years later I'd still be writing stories or books about them at all.
Yeah.
And have more planned. So I didn't think it was going to be, I didn't think I was going to be like stuck with the Fox Patrol. Not that I feel stuck with them, but I didn't think
I get it. Yeah.
It was going to have any lasting power. And I feel like I make up a new mercenary unit every couple of months to use sure. somewhere in BattleTech. So,
I mean, that's BattleTech in general, right? If we're not seeing more mercenary units on a weekly basis, it's not BattleTech. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I have a document of a list of just names of mercenary units that I come up with in my head when I'm just thinking about stuff, because that's how often I use them, especially since somehow I became the guardian of the lone wolves somehow, which is just full of mercenary units that get mentioned all over the place. So, I've got to come up with mercenary units all the time. So the Fox Patrol was just sort of me going like, you know what I liked when I was a kid? Boy Scouts.
Yeah. No, that's great. Funny enough, I think I mentioned it really early on the show, but that's been 2 years ago now. So White Fox, my gamer tag, my handle, everything, that is originally from BattleTech. It was, you know, like 1990. I'd read some of the fiction at that point. Obviously, I thought Hans Davion, the Fox, was pretty cool, but maybe not 1990, whenever the clans basically invaded, because it was a kind of a combination of Hans Davian's, you know, intelligence and craftiness, but then also I was a big Ghost Bear fan. So, you know, as especially after in 95 when the Ghost Bear Legacy edition for MechWarrior 2 came out. So that was that's the White Fox origin. And, you know, it's lasted forever. I've got my logo here that's evolved over the years and pretty proud of it. But yeah, so like I said, big fan of foxes. I've always used that as my gamer tag, or had mercenary paint schemes and you know mercenary legion, you know, mercenary companies in all of my homebrew games and campaigns and stuff. So like I said, big fan of foxes. But that's cool. I really appreciate that. Real quick, before we dive into the Fox Patrol, is there anything other than the Fox Patrol that you've been really enjoying in BattleTech lately?
A lot of stuff. Like, I'm really enjoying everything everyone else is doing in the late Dark Age and Ilclan era. I really love the stuff like Michael Ciravella's been doing, like Trial of Birthright and Damocles Sanction.
He's doing great. Two of my
favorite books. The stuff Jason Schmetzer's done with the Wolster Goons and with the new Grey Death Legion has been great.
Yeah.
Everything Jason Hance has been doing, with like his Sea Fox stuff and his, all the stuff he's been doing has been really good. Like Shrapnel has just been fun.
It's definitely been blowing up for sure.
The Shrapnel Gothic episode, issue was just terrific.
I haven't got to dive into that yet, but I know the Of Mechs and Men guys, I'm really close with them, and they just put out their review of it. Were you on there with them? Was that you? No, it's Hans' story that they're talking about.
Yeah, no, I've been on there with them before, but not about that issue. No.
Okay.
And speaking of Fox Patrol.
Yeah, I was gonna say I thought you had one in there too. So
I've got a story in there, but it's not Fox Patrol, it was Lone Wolves.
Okay.
But the free fiction story for October
is
Fox Patrol gothic story. So
yeah.
If you see this today, you can still download it for free at the Catalyst website.
Yeah.
It might still be around tomorrow, but it's going away fast.
They rotate those on a monthly basis. So
yeah. And Mike Stackpole's Death Kangaroos, just, I love those so much.
Yeah.
Stackpole,
I know you have a special relationship with Stackpole. He has been one of my favorite authors from the very beginning, to the point where I read almost all of his other fiction out there. I mean, all the Star Wars stuff. But what's funny, and I did tell him this at Gen Con 2 years ago, is that my favorite fantasy series, my camera is doing its weird adjustment again. My favorite fantasy series is actually his, like, one of his first, which is the Dark Glory War. I don't know if you've read these, and the Dragon Crown books. It's kind of a Lord of the Rings esque epic, that book is like the prequel, and then there's three books in the series. But I absolutely love it. I mean, I've it's inspired like D&D campaigns and all sorts of stuff. So always enjoyed his writing as well. Shout out to Stackpole for sure.
Yeah, he and I have been having a lot of fun right now lately with the Chain Story project he's been doing, which is just a bunch of sword and sorcery fiction.
Oh, fun.
He's been curating, where it's just free short stories. He's been writing a bunch of, and I've been writing some of, and a whole bunch of other people have been, and it's just,
yeah,
it's just fun.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that for sure. I do enjoy reading.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let's dive into the reason we're here. We're going to look at the Fox Patrol, and we are going to bring up the presentation because this is a video podcast as well as a audio podcast. So if you are listening on Spotify or whatever podcast platform that you choose, would appreciate if you go take a look at the YouTube video. It is youtube.com/@TheMercenaryStarPodcast, and you can follow along. We've got a couple great pieces of art as well as just some info on the Fox Patrol, and would definitely appreciate a like and subscribe because I am so close to 1,000. And getting that's the threshold for being able to go on to bigger and better things with in YouTube. So anyway, thank you for that. And let's dive into the presentation. Okay, so the Fox Patrol, and this is going to be just kind of a unit history summary. Real quick, as well as kind of the real life happenings of where they came from. In universe, they were founded in 3145, I think. That's like the timeline for Katie finding the Kit Fox and then starting the Fox Patrol.
Somewhere in between there, she met, she found the Kit Fox at the beginning there, and then somewhere between there and 3145, she met Arkie and Evan, and then they formed the group.
Absolutely.
I haven't written the story about when they met exactly, so there's no official time of when that happened.
Okay. Yeah.
So when that story gets written, we'll have an official time.
An official date.
Yeah, an official date, but there's no official date yet.
That's okay. That's fine. And yeah, like you mentioned, she finds the Kit Fox in the jungles of the planet that she's on. We'll get to that in the unit summary here in a minute. They're still in existence in Ilclan. Like we said, Katie Ferraro is the founder and commander, and they first appeared in The Secret Fox, which was Shrapnel number 3, December 2020. Right? I'm not wrong?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Perfect. And then a couple of fun facts. I actually caught about 10 minutes of your stream with read the other day and heard the first one, which is probably why you saw it on there, that Katie was originally supposed to find an Arctic fox mech.
Yeah. That was my initial mech that I wanted to give her. And for whatever reason, the fact checkers nixed that idea. I'm not sure what combination of factors went into that.
Sure.
They ended up saying, well, what about a kit fox? And I ran with that, and I didn't realize what sort of problems that was going to cause for me later.
Right.
But especially since now I play lots of kit foxes now.
Yeah.
But no, I've kind of fallen in love with the challenges of the kit fox.
Sure.
And it's a former Kellhounds mech. A Kellhounds mech that got found in the forest there.
Yeah. Or the jungle. Yeah. I loved that nod for sure. I actually, in thinking about it, the kit fox was the first metal mini that I bought, along with the Kodiak, of course, for Clan Ghost Bear, from Ralpartha back in the day before it was Ironwind Metals. And so, that was, again, I told you, I love foxes. And we did have it in plastic. Maybe that was played into it as well. We had a plastic kit fox whenever in 2020. But yeah, so the initial inspiration you also had on here was part of Iron Giant. Great movie.
Yeah, no, I really loved the idea of a kid finding a robot, you know, just some kid finding something that was theirs. And that was something that really spoke to me. And I hadn't, in all my reading of BattleTech, I hadn't seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that would be a really cool story to tell. And that was what kind of inspired the first story for the Fox Patrol. And originally it was supposed to take place, she was supposed to find the kit fox in a lake. And that was my inspiration from how I used to play that old MechWarrior game.
Yeah.
In MechWarrior,
SNES.
From the SNES game, you could really, like, I hated dealing with ammo and playing with, and again, this sort of also inspires the whole Fox Patrol thing. Like I could never manage to afford ammo and resupplies and stuff. So I would just equip all of my mechs with lasers and try to pick contracts I knew would happen on planets that had lakes. And yeah. I would just go sink my heat in lakes. Right. And I thought, well, what if a mech pilot overheated in a lake and died, and then a dam filled in and the lake filled in over the mech, and she's out there swimming in the middle of the lake, and she just kind of takes a dive and finds the mech. And John Helfers and Phil Lee, the executive editor and editor of Shrapnel, respectively, were like, no, that doesn't work. And now, having written as much BattleTech as I have, I'm like, yeah, no, that would be, like, logistically, her trying to repair a mech and get it out of the water, like, yeah, that would be a nightmare. But I just really loved the image of this kid taking a swim on this shimmering lake, mm-hmm. taking the dive and finding a mech. Like, it was just this really great imagery, and it would make a really cool, like, painting, but making it work logistically in a story just wouldn't work. But that was...
Yeah, when you're trying to recover that large a piece of machinery, that would be difficult to explain.
Yeah.
Unless, dad owns a salvage company, maybe, you know, like,
yeah,
pull it out of the water. But
yeah, she'd have to tell somebody about it at that point. But no, the backstory of how it got there was like how I had sort of gotten caught up in it. And, you know, the mystery of it being sort of lost in the jungle worked just as well for me.
Yeah.
So I wrote it that way.
No, that's great. That is great. I kind of mentioned it before we started recording, but I having restored a classic car in my younger days, and being a bit of a car guy myself, I appreciated the scene in the story of like finding something old, restoring it. You know, we talk about in BattleTech that these mechs, especially in the Succession Wars, right? They were all classic cars. They were all classic 100, 200, 300 year old mechs until we got to the Clan Invasion and they finally started ramping up production again. So yeah, I loved that kind of aspect, but with a clan mech, right? That had been hidden away, you know, kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, somebody found a Mustang in somebody's barn, you know, and it's something that they can pull out and restore and is a surprise to see later.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I think people respond to most about Katie as a character is that it's very relatable how excited she gets about different mechs, because I think a lot of people respond to that with cars in that way. But B, I think we get excited about mechs, especially when we play with them on the tables and in ways that I think she does when she sees them in the stories.
Yeah, she's always breaking them down, always relating to them for sure. Awesome. Well, let's see. Moving on here, there's not any full source books for the Fox Patrol yet. I mean, who knows?
I think we've talked about it publicly before. I've written a spotlight on it. It's just not out yet. I don't know what the publication schedule for it is, but there is one in the works.
A spotlight. Nice. That's great. But Katie is in Legends 2. So that's on page 137, which came out in July of 2024. There is a little bit of Fox Patrol stuff in the BattleTech Universe book, I think. If not a mention, then at least the logo.
Just the logo is in there.
That was actually
what the logo was created for, actually.
To get it in there first. Book. Gotcha.
Yeah, like the book was in production long before anybody knew how popular they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, because they've been working on it for a long time.
Ray Arastia, the line developer, was like, I sense this becoming a thing. I want to get the logo in there.
Yeah, no, that's great. Okay, so did I count right? There's 9. I mean, I know there was there's more short stories that were written and compiled, but, you know, once they're compiled, do we have 9 stories about the Fox Patrol? I figured if anyone should know, you should know.
You know, I've lost count of BattleTech stories. I think 9 sounds accurate. 10 if you count Fox Marauders.
Oh, true.
And then I've written another one that's turned in that I don't know when it's coming out. But 9 sounds accurate.
Okay.
Which it seems like a lot. That's actually a lot than... A lot more than most Merc companies get, actually.
It is. And I definitely find that out as I research these mercenary units. But Secret Fox was the first, Fox Patrol in June 2021. I'm also using the references from Sarna here. The Fox and the Bear, December of 21. A Fox on Galatea, June 22. The Fox Hunt, which was all of those, I think, combined plus a bonus story.
It was Fox Tales, which included Fox Hunt.
Which is the Fox Hunt. Okay, yes, gotcha.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we had Lone Wolf and Fox, which was another collection, but included Jade Foxes.
Yes, and it collected that and Mary Foxmas.
And Mary Foxmas. Okay. Yes, which I have listed down there as well. Mary Foxmas was the Christmas story from December 24. And then Without Question, they have a brief snippet in Without Question, the Jade Falcon novel. That was in May of 24. And then Outvoxed, which just came out in October of 2025. So
That does cover it. So
okay. Good. Like I said, I was hoping I didn't miss any, but you know. Sometimes the internet is not a reliable place to find things. So
no, that is correct. And that is the full list. And then awesome. The alternate universe the Fox Marauders.
Right, and, right.
The title for their next story might change, so I'm not gonna.
I'm not gonna
blow that here.
Yeah, no, it's not a problem. Okay, well, hey, let's talk a little bit about their history. This is basically, you know, short summary with some highlighted points that, from the first eight books. So not including Outfoxed yet. We'll have a little talk on that at the end. But, you know, Katie was an orphan on Jurangle. Existing planet. Did you make that one up?
That was an existing planet.
Okay.
And it was just, there wasn't a whole lot on there. And it was a backwater where not a lot had happened. So
yeah, I love that in the BattleTech universe. It's similar to Star Wars in that the universe is so big that there are planets all over the place that have little to no detail, and you know, players can go and just create their own story there. So, love that. In the Lyran Commonwealth, though, and she found and repaired and abandoned Kelhound's Kitfox. If you are watching the video, we got a picture of Katie from Legends and a picture of her Kitfox with its excellent rust red, rust brown, orangish and gray camo, or not camo, paint scheme, which is great. And then met up with Archie Colorado and Evan Huxley. Archie Colorado, that's a great name, by the way. You know, just like, I don't know, Colorado, kind of fun. And I did find it funny that in exchange for repairs, that's what they're like, hey, we'll join you if you can just help us keep our mechs put together. So,
and do all the paperwork
seriously, which, you know, at the end of the day, like, trust in that to, cause let's see, she found it when she was like, what, 15, 16?
She was 17.
17. Okay.
Yeah.
But then,
it was like yeah. 17, like a day, like the weeks after her 17th birthday. Sure. So she's still just an adolescent.
Right. And so then trusting her with the paperwork, as like a 19, 20 year old, a couple years later, that's a lot. That's a lot, but that's funny.
Yeah.
They spent 3 years on Jurangle. You know, their kind of big accomplishment there was destroying the Jurangle Raiders and eventually purchasing a Confederate dropship. First of all, how much does a Confederate dropship cost?
Well, that really depends on how stolen it might be.
Okay, well, that's true. That's true.
And that was definitely something that they grappled with in the story. They're like, I think this thing is stolen for the price. I didn't mention the price because the economics of BattleTech don't usually make sense.
It's true. It's true. But, you know, definitely when thinking of mechs being in the, you know, single millions to, you know, 20, 30 million C-bills, thinking of a dropship, I was like, oh, so they've been like really saving their money.
It was probably a lot. And it was also probably a lot of trade and mech repairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I asked about how much it would probably cost, and I was told, don't ask. So,
yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
No, I don't have an answer.
I do love the Confederate dropship, though. I did not, you know, dropships and jump ships and stuff like that. We've got kind of the standards that everyone knows, the Leopard, the Union, the, oh my gosh, the one that holds a battalion, that now Overlord, that kind of everyone knows. This one coming in at being able to carry six mechs, but being kind of like a smaller Union style spherical dropship, I thought was very cool for like a small unit like this. I liked learning about the fact that it could do like a whole lance and some aerospace fighters or six mechs, and still have room. So that's cool choice. Not that you need me to tell you that, but I did like that and appreciate that. Then they went to the Rosalhag Dominion, which I have read all of these, but it's been a while. And so I totally forgot that they were actually, that was the, where the planet they went to next was at. It definitely kind of find it odd being a clan ish, you know, nation that they were hired, but obviously by locals who are probably not, to come in and hunt some that pirate Kodiak, which is a great cover on the Fox Tales.
Yeah.
Once again, we got that up on the screen on the YouTube video. But yeah, it didn't seem like there was much there after that, though. Like, that was kind of just like by itself, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the implication of some other stories where they had to do some more work there after in order to afford to get off planet.
Sure. As has been the case with most of their missions.
Yeah. But there hasn't been any storytelling there since then.
Okay.
And there's definitely, I've learned so much about the Dominion since I wrote that story that when I go back and revisit that era of their lives, it'll definitely have some more interesting things to happen there. But
yeah.
But yeah, they've spent quite a bit of more time in clan space than I think people might realize.
Yeah, especially then going on to in a minute when they get down to the Jade Falcon area, but also working in the periphery, fighting against the Queen Anne's privateers. I didn't look up the location on this. Was this north? Where was this at on the map? There, is it north of the Lyrans, or is it kind of north of
Clan Space? I want to say that was way. I think that was like below. I had to do so much math to figure out how to get them back to
the hinterlands.
Back to the hinterlands. But I think it was like down, way down south, like below. Like, I think it was in pirate territories, like by the Tortuga Dominions kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. So, man, yeah, that is far.
And it was, and it came down to hand waving, like, oh, it's lucky we ran into that command circuit that let us tag along, kind of thing.
Right, right. Okay, yeah, they would probably have to for that, but
yeah.
And then, yes, recruited by the Lone Wolves, traveling to the hinterlands, they end up working, yeah, more in clan space for the Aluna Mercantile League, and then also fought on the Battle of Sudeten alongside the Chistu Jade Falcons, which I know you've had a lot to do with them. I've enjoyed their story, other than the fact that they took such away from my Ghost Bears. So, which I'm sure you hear all the time.
I mean, in fairness, that was the source book writers did that. I just dramatized it.
I do understand that for sure.
I mean, those Ghost Bears are thriving. They're doing really well with their new parents.
Yeah.
And and they still have all those ideals. They're doing good.
It was really that, you know, as a Ghost Bear fan, and I'm sure you've probably heard this, you know, family has been that like differentiator for Ghost Bears for so long that I think a lot of us were like, found it really hard to believe that they didn't feel like they were part of the Ghost Bear family to begin with. And obviously I know the way you wrote it was like kind of to try to let them have that separation, you know, more easily for sure. I think we're all waiting for some Ghost Bear redemption, because I think, you know, even if they have to have the Civil War, I think that and I can only presume that you were trying to get as much information as you could with as limited time as you could in the book. You know, definitely would love to see it spread out over multiple books, because it did feel like, oh, the beginning of this book. And again, I understand this is coming from all the stuff that came before with the Dark Age. There was no fiction for it, was all source books.
Yeah.
And so it was like, but you know, because of that, I think the feeling of, well, at the beginning of the book, the Ghost Bears are great. At the end of the book, the Ghost Bears have already had a civil war, and you're like, wait, what?
Like, yeah, no, so, I think, The novella series. I've got 4 long novellas that are coming out in a series starting Q4 this year. That are all ghost bears that do some of that fiction that start in the Dark Age and take you all the way through into their incursion into the Combine after the Civil War. Yeah. They're going to give you a lot of that meat that you're looking for.
No, that'll be great. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, so just to show a couple more pieces of art here before we move on to our discussion of Outfoxed. Do have the Fox Patrol making the cover of Shrapnel number 16. And so we show the Quick Draw and the Locust there. And then also showing the cover of Outfoxed, which has a fantastic image of a griffin punching a night sky, which I was I enjoyed seeing the night sky, you know, in fiction. I feel like we don't see it very often. And so we'll get to that scene in a minute. And then also, we had the Marauder from the group was actually in Hotspot Hinterlands, on page 130, found it just before we started recording. But that was good. I didn't realize that was there. 'Cause it's not like in a section about Fox Patrol. It's just in a table. Yeah. So, no. And then, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like, it's, I've been really fortunate. We've been able to have really great, like, mostly on covers too.
Yeah, no, that's fun. And then just some photos from around the internet. We had some awesome painted, a lance of Fox Patrol mechs. And the Fox Patrol dice puck, which is very cool. I'm jealous of that, and the pin as well, which I know those were part of the Kickstarter stuff.
Maybe not the dice puck, but
the pin was, wasn't it?
No. Those are just convention exclusives now, and I've got.
Oh, okay.
All right. I picked up a bunch so that when I do conventions, I've got some for folks. So if you catch me at conventions, usually I'll have some.
Nice.
To sell, and patches too. But yeah, they were, again, Fox Patrol when the Kickstarter was happening.
I thought for some reason they had been one of the options to choose, you know, when you could choose the pin and the coin and the stuff like that. But I guess not.
No, they got, it was funny, Adepticon 2023 is really when Fox Patrol started getting on the radar of like Randall Bills and Lauren Coleman, because I was there as a guest at Adepticon and they were there because it was the big, you know, 40th anniversary, or was it 2024? It was 2024.
Was the 40th. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the year it was. It was the big 40th. And people kept coming up going like, when are we getting Fox Patrol merch? When are we getting Fox Patrol merch? When are we getting Fox Patrol merch? And Lauren literally had no idea who the Fox Patrol were. and so he kept going like, why are people asking about this? And Randall had to explain to him, oh, it's the unit like Brian made.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea. And then they had, for the next year, they had the patches. You know, it was earlier this year. They had the patches and the pins ready and they blew out of them. And they were all just like, oh, I guess this is a thing.
Yeah, no, it's good. Anytime you can, like, I'm also do a bit of graphic design, on the side. And so anytime you can have a well-designed logo, I think it goes like somebody attaches to it and they go for it for sure. So, okay. Well, hey, let's get into Outfoxed, shall we?
Yeah.
So very graciously you sent me a preview copy, and I didn't get it quite finished before release, but I enjoyed the story. And we have showing the cover image there of Outfoxed, of the Griffin and the Night Sky. And so I'm just going to kind of give the description that you gave, but then also I think it's probably in all the places where it's being sold, kind of just trying to give people the primer for it here. Led by Katie Ferraro, the Fox Patrol has found its way to the hinterlands, seeking work for a mercenary company of their size. Unfortunately, too many close calls have made Katie a bit cautious, and the jobs she finds aren't exactly the ones that pay well enough to keep up the unit's morale. When they take a bigger job, they have no idea that they're going up against Lord Leon Hansen, son of the Duke of Tybalt and leader of a new unit called Hansen's Hawkeyes. Humiliated, Leon vows revenge against the Fox Patrol, vowing to destroy them for the insolence of their continued existence. Katie has to fight to keep her unit together and alive through all of Hansen's attempts at sabotage, assassination, and destruction. Could Hansen's rage and resources really mean the end of the Fox Patrol? And so that is the plot of the story for those who are watching after the fact. And it's a great setup for them and kind of where they're going next. Anything you want to add to that before we kind of get some questions on that?
No, I think if folks have been following the Fox Patrol through their early adventures, and especially the stuff that happened in Lone Wolf and Fox, like the collection of Lone Wolf and Fox through the serial novel that had appeared in Shrapnel, where Evan in his Locust kind of takes a really brutal hit, and in Jade Fox's at the Battle of Sudeten, where Arky loses his quick draw, Katie is in a place where she really is really worried about losing people. And if people have only read like the early stories, they know the thing about Katie is that she's there not because she wants to hurt people or kill people for money. She's there because she really loves mechs, right? Yeah. And so the idea that she can lose the people around her is really creating a difficult inner situation for her. Mm-hmm. And so this book was really me trying to explore that cognitive dissonance for her, like emotionally. And also I just really wanted to, I don't feel like we've had many good mercenary rivalries in the fiction for a long time.
Yeah.
So I wanted to explore that. And I think giving Katie a rival is just hilarious.
Yeah. So a rivalry is something that, you know, is classic in BattleTech, right? But whose choice was it to have a Hansen as the antagonist? Was that you, or was that suggested?
That was me. I wanted it to be someone that had some connection to BattleTech history, but mm-hmm. with a new unit, and I'd written something in connection to the Rough Riders before, like sort of with Chaos Theory, the story I did for the Alpha Strike box set. The Highlanders had been hired by the Duke of Tybalt, which is Lauren Hansen.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so I had done a little bit of like, it would be funny if they're sort of foppish and have a little bit of privilege, even if Leon Hansen or Lauren Hansen had recently gotten a land holding and a title, that this guy still holds on to that like it's meaningful. You know, that there's some privilege of like, you know, the kid whose dad is a cop, and that thing that makes him think he's a cop too, that sort of privilege.
Yeah.
And I thought that would only be possible with one of these storied sort of mercenary units. And like everything, I picked a few different units it could have been, and the Rough Riders is sort of where it shook out geographically and just sort of like story wise. And it was the easiest to slot in where they hadn't talked about any kids. And I could bring them in. So it was just me kind of doing the math on who was possible.
Okay.
And fact check Dick didn't nix it.
key to getting it done.
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's good. And I'm maybe kind of jumping ahead a little bit here, but like, so obviously we see, Leon, the son here. I definitely didn't realize how young he was until later in the book.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, this guy is really just something, you know, like, cause I don't know why, like the addition of the word Lord made me think, oh yeah, he's gotta be in his like 40s or something, you know, he's full into his entitlement, you know. But no, he's definitely a kid, even younger than Katie, according to we find later.
So it's interesting. My editor, my first editor, the developmental editor, Catherine Monasterio, said the same thing. And we actually went through it in the book and added little things like very young and clues like that in the beginning. And I've heard that from a lot of readers where they're like, I didn't realize how young he was until it's explicit. But
yeah,
if you go back and look at it a second time, like there's a lot of clues like how young he is previously. It's really funny that you're just like, clearly he can't be that clueless and young, but oh, he is.
Well, it does, especially in hindsight, kind of explain that like college age mentality for the character that he you know, again, it makes me think of like a 50s movie with a, you know, the college age kid in his letter jacket having that entire scene play out with Katie in the street, right? That he's like, how dare you, you know, kind of thing. Which, you know, so it again, when I realized how young he was, okay, that made definitely more sense for sure. Although I will say, when I read that, having, you know, read the description of the book, I was like, oh, please let this be not the only reason that he has vowed to destroy them.
Oh, yeah.
I was that's really, I was like, Ryan usually does better than this, you know, like, and then the mech battle later is kind of the real reason. And that's the, you know, the spilling of the drink is the icing on the cake of why it's just offensive. So now that, like I said, definitely redeemed it after I got to that part, but I was just like, oh man, you know, kind of thing. So that's funny. So,
I needed to introduce him early.
Yeah.
Just so that he was on the page. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, again, kind of skipping around our questions here, but how do you, so in thinking of that, you know, you're talking about Katie's maturity, right? And that she is just super hesitant. And I like how you said it earlier, she's here because she likes to talk about mechs. And I had this thought of like, it's kind of like you take a classic car aficionado and then all of a sudden you throw them into war. And they're like,
yeah,
well, I know everything about all these vehicles, but
yeah,
I don't necessarily want them, you know, or a World War II buff who's like all of a sudden being thrust into, you know, combat. I can only imagine, you know, that would be heavy stuff for sure, which obviously you're trying to work through in the book. Okay. So yeah. So then speaking of that, how do you kind of compare the maturity of Katie and Leon, knowing they're both in their like middle, or him in his case, younger 20s?
I think they both have levels of immaturity. I think the difference between the two of them is that Katie realizes it, and Katie's actually working to like address it. Like Katie realizes like, there's obviously something going on here and I need to deal with it. And Leon is not at that point yet. And Leon is probably not going to be at that point for a while because he has the money and people around him and that are disposable enough that he doesn't need to be at that point.
Yeah. He doesn't quite learn that lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. We saw, I feel like we almost see a glimpse of it towards the end, but then it's like, so, you know, the happens and he's like, nah, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. No, no, not going to happen. So, no, that's I've okay. got. Yeah, no, he's going to be a fun character to play with you know, in the future.
And again, you know, like I said, I did catch a little bit of your stream with Red the other day and the whole rivalry of, you know, Jamie Wolf and Wayne Waco kind of thing, balance. I can definitely see that for sure. Although, you know, by the end of it, when Wayne's like, I've been thinking about you every day, and Wolf's like, I don't think about you at all, you know? It's a classic line for Battletech there. Okay, so some other questions then about the story. Why Almatacin?
I pronounce it Almatacin.
Okay.
People can go back old school and call it Stoner Boy, which is what it was on the map for a long time before it was Almatacin.
I did see that. That's funny.
I don't know why, but that's what it was.
Did you pick the name, or did they say, hey, well, let's rename it kind of thing?
No, so that was, this was the hiring hall from, Hotspot's Hinterlands.
Mm-hmm. So did that come first?
Yeah. Okay. So I was writing Voidbreaker at the same time Hotspot's Hinterlands was getting worked on.
Okay.
And so I was working on, and we were working on that sort of in tandem in that team, because I wrote the intro fiction for that. So I was working with that team pretty closely. No, they even started a little bit beforehand. They kind of gave me a heads up about it because it's so close to Sudeten.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So actually, while I was writing Without Question, they kind of gave me a heads up about it. And I was really glad they did, because having a hiring hall one jump from
in
the capital.
The Hinterlands? Yeah.
Yeah. Because not having GE not address it would have been, I feel like, narratively problematic in Without Question.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a hiring hall sprouting up one jump away. So they told me about it initially for Without Question. And so I worked that into the narrative in Without Question. Then they asked me if I wanted to do the opening fiction for it. And then as I was writing Voidbreaker, we worked on it together pretty closely. And they explained to me their plans for what they needed to do with the HPG network, because Voidbreaker was sort of the book about that, and asked me if I had a character in Voidbreaker that they could put in the HPG station. And then asked me to write her profile for that based on what I'd already done in Voidbreaker, which is why she has the cameo in Outfoxed.
Yeah, Petrichor.
Petrichor's there, and which is why she's in the Hinterlands book. But as they were giving me the pages about what Almatacin was in Hotspot's Hinterlands, just to kind of keep me up to date on it and what was going on with Petrichor and how she needed to fit in with that, that's when I started getting the idea about why I thought the Lone Wolves needed to go there, and why a Fox Patrol book there would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a fun playground.
I find it interesting. There's so many contracts being taken on planet, you know?
Yeah.
Also though, it being kind of a Wild West, you know, definitely kind of vibe of, settle where you want to settle because there's no one that's really out here making the rules. Where she kind of has a realization of like, where's the police at one point? And she's like, oh wait, there's not police. So
yeah, it's just the 21st Centauri Peregrine Lancers that are just like, actually, we don't care. And that's kind of why somebody like Leon can thrive in a place like this. But part of it was that I thought it would be a really interesting place for Katie to operate. And part of it was, as a tie-in writer, part of my job is to create interesting stuff for players, right? And I'd already been hearing, because of Lone Wolf and Fox, that players were having a really great time using the Lone Wolves for their campaigns.
Oh, gotcha. Right?
Mm-hmm. And that it was creating a really dynamic, interesting, easy way for players to, or for shops, or for people running games to have players drop in and drop out with their units week to week if they have to miss or whatever, because they can just have contracts with the Lone Wolves, and every week can be a one-off.
Yeah.
And if they miss, they didn't sign up that week, no big deal. And Almatasin and Hotspots Hinterlands was such a great book and setting that moving the Lone Wolves there and putting the Fox Patrol there and expanding it with the book just felt like it would be fun. And with like the source book writing I've done with like Shadowrun and Robotech, and just being a game master myself, I thought it would be fun to be able to kind of put in like story hooks that players and game masters could use if they're creating games in those spaces. So yeah. Almatasin just felt like such a rich setting for that kind of stuff to also support the game and people who might want to play in that setting. Which was, I mean, like the story was first, but getting to support the game and the setting and the players was definitely in the back of my mind, especially in revisions after I felt like I had the story set.
Gotcha. I've just been curious to ask somebody about that because I don't know how much you've looked at like the mercenary stars of, you know, mercenary hiring halls across the Inner Sphere. I've done a little bit of research in that since my podcast name is Mercenary Star. With an homage to the 80s classic Grey Death cover art here. But yeah. There's a hiring hall in Liren space, kind of just south of the Hinterlands and the Jade Falcon zone that never was raided by Word of Blake, that was never raided by the Wolves or the Falcons, that survived through the Civil War. It didn't go through anything with all the stuff that happened on Solaris and Galatea. And it's just there, hanging out, being a great place to be. And it's even got its own kind of like unique take on mech games that are like Mech Olympics almost. It's got a really cool history in that, like, basically this father and son who were this like, CEO and executive of the same company had a competition to see who was going to get the contract for something. And they played rugby in atlases and that determined who would get it. And then that was so popular that then they decided to have mech games every summer, and it brings all these crowds and all these mercenaries to perform feats of piloting skill. And there's like all the, like there's like soccer and hockey and basketball in mechs that are performed, as well as like a battle chess kind of thing. And so again, I'm just like, this is not being utilized and it's there. There needs to be some stories there.
That's cool. And I'm what's the name of the planet?
Yeah, it's one of those things, right, where I should absolutely have it memorized because I mess with it so much. But it is, I can tell you. It is Noiselle.
Oh, I have scenes on Noiselle.
Yeah, the Noiselle Summer Games. There was. It was like a brief mention.
The Tomcats were there for about one scene before they took off.
Yeah.
I've had scenes there, but it wasn't anything long because it was still, we've got to send people to the Hinterlands because that's where the crisis is.
Sure. No, I get that. And I think that if, my own headcanon, if there was going to be big development there, it would be because mercenaries who were loyal to the Lyran Commonwealth are taking contracts, you know, from interested parties there, kind of thing. So
yeah,
I may have my own, you know, couple jottings down of things that could happen there, but no, it's yeah. I again, like I said, having a brand new one form, because you know there's like they've said there's like six or seven that have been out there at any given time, and so yeah, like I said, just. But yeah, again, having it created in the Hinterlands totally makes sense.
Yeah, especially, you know, it's so central to like where all of the fighting is happening. Yeah. And that Wild West environment where so much can happen in system,
mm-hmm.
Because there's so much construction and so much stuff being built and terraformed that so much needs defending.
No,
which is perfect
good.
When you need your milk defense.
Right, exactly, the literal milk run. No, that's good. I appreciated the irony of that for sure. Okay, so let's see, what about the mechs? Have you picked all those, or were those some of them recommended? Obviously the Fox Patrol has kind of been established, but
for the most part I pick the mechs. Every once in a while I'll get told, like, no, you shouldn't use that mech. Here's a suggestion for a replacement, or here's, like, three you should pick from. You know, I've gotten better at it over the years. Like, it used to be I'd pick mechs, and they'd be like, that mech hasn't been in production for 600 years. And it's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's still...
There's a lot of history to go through.
Yeah. There's a couple of mechs I keep trying to sneak in and I keep getting told no, but like I'm still working on it. I figured out a way to get Mackies in with Voidbreaker that they couldn't tell me no with. So
yeah, I saw that that was kind of fun, right? That totally makes sense as a gamer.
Yeah.
I would, you know, people do that all the time. Like let's pick the oldest, slowest thing and
figure out why the hell anybody would want to do this.
Yeah.
And they couldn't.
That's good. I do like the Night Sky was being featured. I feel like it's always been an underrated hatchet mech.
That mech specifically was a mech that I put in there because I played at Gen Con every year. Stackpole and I play Masters and Minions together. Yeah. And there was a year where we played Masters and Minions and someone brought a Night Sky. And it was a year I brought G. Chistu's Gear Falcon and Archer Pride Shrike.
Mm.
And the Night Sky kept Mike and I there for like 5 or 6 hours. And I just could not kill this thing. And it chased me around the board for 5 or 6 hours, just cutting into me. And we shot at this thing over and over and over again, and we just sanded armor around everything, like, and we just couldn't take it down until finally, like, we called the game at like 1 in the morning, which is way too late for me and especially Mike.
Yeah.
At a convention that we're working, like, because we just couldn't win with everything we had, and I was so like. Jokingly enraged about this, I told the guy that we did it. I'm like, I'm going to take care of this in a book. Like, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to be you. And his name is Jason Faberman.
That's awesome.
And he got his comeuppance finally in this book. It took a couple years, but it happened. Yeah.
No, that I mean, it was an annoying mech, right? It was absolutely just kept standing through all the punishment it took. So
yeah,
that's good. No, that's fun.
And I love it. I love that mech. I love it now. Like, and having played with it, I'm like, there's a reason this mech is obnoxious.
Yeah. No, that's great. All right. So let's see. If the Hinterlands were not the place to be, where would you like to see the Fox Patrol visit? What part of the Inner Sphere would you like to see them visit?
You know, well, it's funny because, like, I think the Fox Patrol should not be in the Hinterlands.
Right,
like, I think
right.
The Fox Patrol, like, the Hinterlands is the wrong place for them. They shouldn't mm-hmm. absolutely not be there because it's too dangerous. I think they should be, like, vacationing somewhere. Like, well, nice. I guess the thing is
a nice
there's
garrison
nowhere...
contract.
Yeah, a nice garrison contract somewhere out in, like, the middle of nowhere, like Canopus somewhere, like, yeah, no, there's really nowhere they really belong. Like, they should just go back to Jurangle and guard rice paddies or something.
Nice, nice.
I mean, the thing is that Katie's just not going to do that. I'd like to see them go to Solaris. Solaris. Can you imagine Katie on Solaris?
That would be interesting. That would be interesting. Katie, I'd also be interested to see, like, the culture shock of her visiting, you know, any of the other great houses at this point.
Yeah. No, and that's something. One of the things I love about bringing Katie to new places is that wide-eyed wonder and excitement. Like, the thing about Katie is that, like, everyone else in the BattleTech universe doesn't care that they're in the BattleTech universe,
right?
And Katie feels like she's the only person who does care that she's in the BattleTech universe.
Yeah,
no, it's like when whatever city that you live in, you don't care anything at all about all the touristy stuff until, like, your friend from out of town comes in and you show them all the cool stuff around town. And then you're like, oh, I guess stuff around my town is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Katie is that visitor into your town that shows you all the stuff. Like, the mm-hmm. story on Galatea, I hear from a lot of people, like, wow, it was really cool to see Galatea through her eyes. And I didn't realize it when I was trying to research stuff about Galatea. Nobody'd really written anything about what Galatea's streets are like, or what the
right,
like, what cool buildings are there. And I called up Mike and I asked him about it because, like, he'd written Galatea and, like, mm-hmm. practically created it. And he's like, yeah, no, I didn't
do whatever.
Yeah. And it's funny, I created St. Michael's Cathedral there because I thought, like, why wouldn't you have, like, a cathedral like that, you know, that's that old, you know, as old as Notre Dame is now.
Sure.
In a place like that, that has this dedication to mech warriors and stuff. And he just ran with it. And he loves it. And he's used it in, like, two stories now and giving it that flavor. And I don't think we would have been able to kind of flesh out any parts of Galatea like that without that exuberance of Katie's for just being in a place that has history of mechs written all over it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, anywhere I send her, like, that's going to be something she has. Mm-hmm. She's going to have that excitement for it, no matter how jaded she might get about anything else.
Sure. Absolutely. Awesome. Okay. Well, last question. I almost forgot. At the end, and again, you know, not giving any spoilers away, but at the end we get a glimpse, kind of an internal monologue of Katie considering, maybe I shouldn't be in this Kid Fox. are there, do you have any thoughts on, like, you know, how much bigger would she go? Would it be a jump to a medium or a heavy, or, you know, like, Any thoughts on where she might land on that?
There was a long time I really, really considered having her, like, keep that Kodiak. I love Kodiak. Kodiaks are cool. My favorite assault mech.
I do love a Kodiak, for sure.
So there was definitely a long time where I thought about that. I think Katie's gotten used to really nimble, fast, small mechs, though, so... Mm-hmm.
So anything bigger would need to have a bit of speed, maybe.
Yeah. But she really loves her Kit Fox. If anything were to happen to that, I think she'd be devastated.
Understandable.
Yeah.
She'd have to make some money to be able to put that away in storage, right? Like any good classic car collector would.
Yeah. I'd thought about too. I mean, in Mary Foxmas and Jade Foxes, she does start talking about trying to figure out like new pod configurations for it too. Cause there's definitely better configurations that might help her on the ammo front. And
sure.
But there's definitely, you know, maybe a medium mech that has a little bit more mobility, but more armor.
Yeah.
You know, or even something that, you know, that's light, that still has a little bit more oomph to it. I don't know. I mean, I've played games where I can spend all day in a wolfhound and not go down. But I've also played games where I can walk out and take one shot in my kit fox and go down. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe something like that.
It just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
No, I get that. Yeah. Well, fun. I look forward to that. All right. So you may or may not know, and you may or may not be able to answer, but we always have a segment where we talk about the ideal force pack or a possible force pack for whatever unit we're talking about. So the Fox Patrol force pack has not been revealed to my knowledge as of yet. But my initial thoughts, and then I'll let you respond however you want to respond. My initial thoughts were the Kit Fox, of course, as a repose. Variant quick draw. I don't know how close to the like kind of standard quick draw it is, but I figured that could be that. It could also be a repose. There's nothing that says they have to be any of these specific you know, repose or a variant or a jumping one. But that's kind of the format they used with the mercenary force packs for a while. So a quick draw. An Ion Sparrow. I figured, you know, like let's bring, you know, get something from the new book as well. And I know, I think it's supposed to come eventually in plastic, but, you know, it could be a repose or the jumping one, cause it does have the jump jets. So give it that little plastic plumes to stand on for when you want to do that. And then, the Stormcrow C, because we haven't seen that since Clan Invasion Kickstarter. So that was my thoughts. I will let you respond, how you will. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's a pretty solid list. I think I don't think you'd be unwise to make it make it star-sized and okay, go with the five mechs and the Marauder in there.
Only five, sure, you know.
And throw the Marauder in there because Marauders, they sell, right? They're recognizable.
They do.
And another repose of a Marauder isn't going to be a bad thing.
To some. No. I'm it's funny, right? They are insanely popular and they're great mechs. Iconic. Mine was always the Warhammer. Was my favorite. Between the two of the originals, you know. But that was because I started with BattleTech 3rd edition that had the Warhammer on the front. Also Natasha Krinsky piloted Warhammer, and I just thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Well, part of my thinking is that I talk to a lot of people and they want to be able to just go buy.
Yeah. Since it's only five mechs for the unit. Yeah. Having it as five would be fine.
Yeah. I hear that a lot where people just want to make one purchase and get the whole unit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hold on one second.
And at that point, you'd probably want to replace the quick draw with the Griffin.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Since the Stormcrow's in there. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or some iteration of it.
Yeah. I wasn't sure about the Griffin, like, you know, like, I did think about that because
box for a while.
Yes, it still is. It still is with the Vindicator. Isn't it? I think it's still the Griffin, not the Wolverine. I think it's the Griffin. Anyway, yes.
I haven't bought a beginner box in a while.
Yeah, I've got several of them and I just can't remember.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. That's a good one. So Okay. Yeah. Okay. Last thing. How do you play? Oh, it's a camera.
Oh, I was going to say, they have announced that the Force Pack is coming. I just don't know when, and I don't know what's in it. So. Yeah.
And I did hear that. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So last thing. That was the Force Pack too. If you're looking, that was mine, but I do like changing out the quick draw for that as well. Okay. So last thing, how would you play, or how do you play Fox Patrol at the Table?
So I do a lot of signing events at stores, and I do a lot of conventions. And so I've played Fox Patrol at the Table in just about every way you can imagine. I've played Fox Patrol as an Alpha Strike unit. I've played Fox Patrol as a classic unit. I've played them one at a time. I've played them two or three at a time. I've even played Fox Patrol. One of my favorite convention experiences, actually, is the folks in Colorado. I was a guest at Genghis Khan in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
And they had organized Battle Troops, which is an old BattleTech set. And they set up the scenario from Lone Wolf and Fox where Dex and Rhiannon are training the Alina militia.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. And where Arky in his quick draw is training the infantry, and they have to pack explosives on his ankles. They had a full size battle troops scale quick draw on the table that they had me playing. And they had all of the people playing as infantry trying to pack explosives on my ankles.
That's fun.
With battle troops rules. So I've kind of played Fox Patrol on the table just about every way you can play, because when I show up at events, people really want me to play Fox Patrol, which is great, and I love doing it, which is kind of why I always get a little bit confused about, like, what is their piloting and gunnery skill, or what is their primary mech configuration, because Katie futzes with everything and changes it a little bit every time because she's Katie and she's a mechanic, but also because the way a lot of folks play, they will change the configurations or the piloting and gunnery skills to match the BV for what the battle value for whatever anybody's bringing to fight against me or whatever. So I never know what variants I'm going to be playing with when I come to a table. And I've probably done that 20 or 30 times.
Nice.
So I'll show up and I'll play with whatever anybody hands me that's in a Kit Fox chassis or whatever.
Sure. You see them? Like, what kind of strategy do you use? Do you play them as? Since they're kind of a mixed lance of size and speed.
Yeah, they really are. For me, a lot of it is really... Using the big guns as sort of the anchor, and using Evan and Katie to sort of try to flank and get back shots.
Yeah, makes sense.
Especially
in the Ion Sparrow.
With the Ion Sparrow, definitely. The Ion Sparrow has kind of changed things, which is why I'm so excited Ironwind finally got out their metal Ion Sparrow. That Ion Sparrow is mean. It does, like in Classic, it runs a 9-12-10. And it's got, I don't know. Evan runs a prime configuration, which is pretty mean on its own.
Yeah.
But the C configuration is 6 small ER or ER small lasers with targeting computers.
Yeah.
So and it's heat neutral. So like there's no
Yeah, he just fire everything all the time.
Yeah, you fire everything all the time. You can do like 25 damage into somebody's back, and you've got a TMM of like 5 every turn. Nobody can hit you. Yeah. If you've got initiative, the downside is if somebody can hit you, you're probably dead that turn, or you lose something vital.
Sure, as a lot of quick, fast, light mechs are.
Yeah, but that's really kind of the way it is. Like the Marauder. And the Marauder and the Quick Draw really kind of do the anchor. The Kit Fox kind of depends on the terrain, whether or not it's a sniper or a flanker. Because the Kit Fox is actually not as fast as you think it is.
It's not. It's not. And it's also not the most armored either.
No. No, it has a lot less armor than a Locust, actually.
It has good weaponry for a 35-tonner, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so really, it really depends on the terrain of whether or not the Kit Fox plays as a sniper or a flanker.
Yeah.
Cause sometimes you can just get boned by the terrain, and then you just have to find some heavy woods and snipe, because if you leave the heavy woods, you just can't, you're just going to get picked off in one shot.
Yeah, yeah, especially and if you're not moving to max speed as a Kit Fox, for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Brian, thanks for joining today. Really appreciate it. It's been a fun discussion on Fox Patrol and your new novel, Outfoxed, which is out as of now. Couple things to finish the show here. If you've been following the show at all, I was part of a campaign setting that BungleTech came up with. I helped do some of the narrative work for that. And that is something that is still ongoing. We have a mission that just came out, and there should be two more, one for November and one for December. And so definitely go check out the Global Campaign Initiative over at BungleTech. We had a really cool piece of art done for it. There's little bits of it in of all of our podcasts in there. There's a Mercenary Star poster on the back wall. It's in the presentation that I sent you if you want to look at it. But yeah, so for those watching and listening, if you are still playing that, be looking for those episodes or those new missions to drop as well. Also, be sure to check out our sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. That's fortressminiaturesandgames.com. Be sure to check them out. Especially if you don't have any kind of local game shop, definitely love to support those. But if not, they're a great resource for BattleTech. So, well, thank you again, Brian, for joining and for hanging out with me today. Any shout outs that you want to give?
I don't know. I always choke at that question. just everybody who's really just been supportive of the Fox Patrol and just the stuff I've been doing in BattleTech in general. It's been really great to be so accepted in BattleTech and, just to get to play. Like I love getting to play in the universe, not just even as a writer, but just as a player. It's just a great space to play in. So thanks everybody for
absolutely
letting me.
Absolutely. It's my favorite IP for sure. You can also check out Brian online if you engage with him in socials. It's Swankmotron, I think, right?
Yes.
And then that's also your website, swankmotron.com.
Yep.
There'll be a link in the show notes. I know sometimes you have some extra special stuff that goes up on sale, autographed books and stuff that people can check out. And I think that that is going to do it for this episode. And look forward to getting to the next one. And as of today, recording, it's Halloween. So happy Halloween, and hope you have a good evening with family. And can enjoy that. So, well, thank you all. We'll see you next time. Good night. God bless.